Today on Straight Talk Africa, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari met with President Donald Trump at the White House Monday. He is the second African leader to do so. They discussed ways of enhancing the strategic partnership between the United States and Nigeria. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Esther Githui-Ewart, your social media reporter.
And today, it's a discussion and reaction on Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari's visit to the White House Monday.
And coming up later, our audience has weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook and Twitter comments. We'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari was welcomed to the White House by U.S. President Donald Trump on Monday. My colleague Paul Sisko has more on the story.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be with President Buhari of Nigeria. We have many things that we do together, as you know, especially on terrorism and terrorism-related. We also have a very big trade deal that we're working on.
President Trump warmly welcomed Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari to the White House Monday.
Thank you, Mr. President, very much for inviting me. It's a great honor. I'm very grateful for it.
The Nigerian president and President Trump focused primarily on security, weapon sales, and matters of joint national interest.
We are very grateful to the United States for agreeing to give us the aircraft we asked for, the spare parts. We are even more grateful for the physical presence of the United States military sections that go to our institutions in Nigeria and train them and go to the front in the northeast to see how they are performing.
They held an afternoon news conference from the White House Rose Garden.
How soon will you be visiting Nigeria?
Well, I would like to visit Nigeria. I'd like very much to visit Nigeria. It's an amazing country, and in certain ways, I hear from the standpoint of the beauty of a country, there's no country more beautiful. So I would like to. And the first part of your question, I couldn't hear what you were saying. Go ahead.
The helicopters.
Oh, helicopters. Oh,
yes.
We love helicopters. He likes them more than I do. He likes buying helicopters, but he is, and they're buying a lot of helicopters. Helicopters.
We want to know how soon
very soon.
You're releasing them to the country.
Yes, very soon. We're getting it approved.
My question is to President Trump.
Thank you.
The fight against corruption is one of the major achievements that the Nigerian government has presented to the world. And the records show that United States of America is one of the major destination countries of illicit funds and assets from Nigeria. To what extent did you discuss the need to repatriate these funds back to Nigeria to fund critical infrastructure, to cut down funding for terrorism, and also to reduce illegal immigration from Nigeria to your country?
In terms of corruption, Nigeria has a reputation, as you understand very well, for very massive corruption. I also know that the president has been able to cut that down very substantially. We have a lot of people in this country and, frankly, the country itself that invests in Nigeria. So cutting down on that corruption element and a corrupt element is very important to us. And the president will be able to do that.
The United States recently approved $600 million in military sales for Nigeria. The equipment and money are being used to fight Boko Haram. The extremist group has been waging a decade-long insurgency in Nigeria. Earlier, the U.S. president wanted an update on the kidnapped Chibok girls.
We have very much decimated ISIS. Much has taken place over the last 12 months. But Boko Haram has been terrible. And how did you do with the young women that were kidnapped?
We haven't given up. We are trying to get everybody back, join their families and their schools.
President Trump warmly met with the leader of Africa's most populated nation. He condemned Boko Haram as a ruthless jihadist group, and they vowed together to work to defeat them. Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Joining us here in the studio are two distinguished guests. Grace Aliheri Abdu, a VOA Hausa journalist, and the Reverend Nyedi Okule, Executive Director, Africa Faith and Justice Network. Well, Grace and Nyedi, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having me. Always a delight to be in this prestigious forum and to be hosted by you. I'm honored.
You're most welcome, sir. And last but not least, Dr. Baba Adam, Dean of Institutional Effectiveness, Merced College, California. He joins us live via Skype from Merced, California. You're most welcome, Dr. Baba. Dr. Baba, can you hear me? Well, I guess there must be some technical difficulties. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me?
No, I cannot hear him.
Well, I guess we do have some technical difficulties, but I'm sure that he'll be able to join us shortly. Later in the program, we will give our audience a chance to call in with your question or comment. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. Let me come back to you, Grace, immediately. First of all, how are you? This is the first time I have the honor, in fact, to host you on this platform.
Thank you for having me, yes.
You're most welcome.
Thank you.
You covered President Buhari's visit at the White House and what have you.
Yes.
Tell us, what was your experience like?
Oh, well, it was fun, you know, doing what you know how to do best. As expected, you know, we heard that some people will be demonstrating. And then we had people, let me even say, three groups of people. One demonstrating for a certain cause. Another group was there to support President Muhammadu Buhari. And another, they call themselves the neutral group, like the people in the middle. So the group that was protesting actually is the Biafran group, you know, that was specifically asking for the release of their leaders. They were, you know, accusing the Nigerian government of on so many issues, and specifically saying that there's no going back in their effort to break from Nigerian country and form their own country, that they have tried everything possible to see that they broker peace, but it's not working. And so for that reason, they just want their own country. And the other group, like I said, that was there to support President Muhammadu Buhari. Interestingly, I met some people that are not even Nigerians. They were just there that they said, you know, a little boy that I interviewed, I asked if he speaks outside. He said, no. I asked if he is a Nigerian. He said, no. And I asked why he was there. He said, well, his father told him that a king from Nigeria is coming, and so he was there to see him. And the people that were there to support Muhammadu Buhari indicated that they are very much in support of what is going on in Nigeria. They are very happy with the progress that has been made thus far. They want to see that this continues, even though the promises that President Muhammadu Buhari made before assuming office, you know, his electioneering campaign promises were not fulfilled, but they feel that a lot of progress has been made, and they believe that given a second chance, it will bring, especially these issues that even President Donald Trump mentioned, this issue of corruption. They talked about the insurgency of Boko Haram. They talked about even the Chibok girls. You know, the effort that has been made to get some of them returned. And so they said, given the opportunity, they believe that President Muhammadu Buhari is on track to bring the remaining girls. And as you know, it's not only the Chibok girls that, you know, are still in Boko Haram custody. There are so many people, men and women, especially women and children that are there. I understand that they are in even, I mean, like thousands of them. I don't know. I mean, there's no way you can verify the number. But there are so many people apart from the deputy, Lia Sheribu, the deputy girl that is still with them, and the 112 Chibok girls that are still under Boko Haram custody. So there are a lot of women. So Nigerians generally, the people that were there yesterday in support of Muhammadu Buhari were saying that they believe, given a second chance, President Buhari is going to do much more than they already are seeing at the moment. So
Grace, were you surprised that there were three different groups demonstrating? Or
I am not surprised, because that's the beauty of democracy, you know. That's democracy. If I only saw people supporting President Buhari, I would have been surprised. And if I only saw the group that was there protesting, especially the Biafran group, I would also have been surprised. But like I said, to have three different groups, these people in the middle saying, I am neither here nor there, I'm just saying this is what is happening in the country and this is what needs to be done.
And out of the three groups, which group had more people?
Of course, the Biafran group.
Really?
Interesting. Well, let me say 50-50. I mean, on the other side, but the group in the middle, I think there were just a couple of people.
I see.
Yes.
Well, Reverend Niyede, I know that you were not in town, but obviously you must have been following very, very closely. You heard about, of course, the three different groups, and the third one apparently is the third force. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know whether it is the third force or Biafra group or whatever, but is that a reflection, for example, of what some are calling the third force in terms of the upcoming elections in Nigeria?
Yeah, let me go back to what Grace said earlier, talking about the issue of corruption and talking about security. Okay. I know President Muhammadu Buhari came in. Actually, he was elected on the promises of fighting corruption. And people were looking at him, looking up to him as a former military general to contain the issue of security in Nigeria. These two issues are really key to the functioning of the Federal Republic of Nigeria. Now, on the issue of corruption, I know he came in, he has tried to tackle as much as he can. We have heard, you've heard here, a number of revelations about people just stealing money as if there is no tomorrow. You know, even prior to that, the Attorney General here in Washington of the Federation, Eric Holder, had to freeze $458 million belonging to Mohamed Abacha.
You're talking about the last administration, correct?
Yes, but the point is that, you know, this administration has tried to pursue leads to money that has been siphoned out of the country abroad. And recently, a condominium was foreclosed in New York, $50 million, belonging to some Nigerian who had been in government. So that is going in a way there. But there is something here that is troubling many Nigerians. The security issue is getting worse. The security issue is getting worse. Sometimes some of the people who have been caught in what they had looted, people are tracing, okay, what do we do with it? The question that was asked to President Trump about the U.S. being a haven for looters. So what is happening there? So on those two counts, we can say that, well, the people are still anxious to see the promise fulfilled.
Well, unfortunately, Reverend Anyedi Okule, time happens not to be our best ally.
Yeah.
Could we come back to that and
absolutely
a little bit more later? Before pausing for a short break, we want to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now streaming live on Facebook. To watch our show, just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa and don't forget to share it with your friends. We are on Twitter and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka That's VOA Shakan. Join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOANigeriaUS, and we'll air some of your comments later in the show. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githu, your words. And, of course, this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. I'm informed that our third guest is now on board. Good morning, Dr. Baba Adam.
Good morning. Thank you for the invitation. How are you, sir?
I am hugely terrific. I have to tell you, frankly, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa for the first time, and especially from the Golden State.
Yes. Well, you are an alumni of University of California.
Well, I'm afraid I don't seem to be hearing what you are saying. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Let me increase the volume. One moment.
Now, Dr. Adam.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, let me come. Apparently, we do have experiencing some problems with Dr. Adam from the Golden State. But let me come back to you again, the Reverend Aniedi. Before we really get into the beef, we're talking about, obviously, the issues of security, corruption, and a lot of other things. What about the trip itself, really? What is your report card?
Well, the visit itself, I think, to have him, he was invited. So that shows some significance, some acknowledgement.
And he's the second president from Africa, be invited at the White House.
At the White House.
After the Egyptian president.
Absolutely. So that shows some significance, and that shows also that the U.S., in spite of some of the rhetorics we hear, looks at Nigeria as a partner to reckon with. Okay, so the issues of bilateral talks that we heard the two of them talk about in terms of ensuring security and trade issues. So I think on that note, to have the president of Nigeria here in town discuss it and beam it back to the country is of great significance in itself. I think that also that it would be, in terms of scorecard, you mentioned Biafra. I think, many Nigerians don't really give attention to the way that we see it bloom up, because what is...
And you happen to come from that particular region,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, I come from there. And I can say that Biafra, as we knew it, I was a little boy growing up when Biafra was there. Biafra, as we knew it, does not exist. In the sense that that was a region by itself in the 1960s.
But isn't it possible, frankly, that some of these people are using Biafra as a metaphor for sending a message of saying, you know what, we are tired of being marginalized?
Absolutely, yes. That's a metaphor that many Nigerians can relate to at all levels, not just that zone. There are many sectors of the country that could talk about being marginalized. you know. I think too that if you look at the issue of whether we talk about the North-South relationship, or is it East-West, or Christian, Muslim, and all of that. Hmm. Every group can have an issue of being marginalized.
The North-South divide. And yes. In fact, what about Boko Haram?
Yes, Boko Haram.
What are the fundamental root causes of them?
Marginalization.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, in fact, if you can give me a little minute to talk about Boko Haram as I understand it, as I have seen it. Boko Haram originated from a feeling of being sidelined, from a feeling of not reaping the fruits of the republic, from a feeling that they were not being cared for. And so they started talking about the issues in the country that marginalized people. And when they started, the governor of the state actually used them, you know, used them for political gains. At one time, Muhammad Yusuf, the founder of Boko Haram, had 250,000 followers. And so when the then governor used them and then could dump them, that's when things started going the other way around. So there's a feeling of being sidelined by disaffected groups. And, you know, Pope Francis has said repeatedly that when you begin to analyze violence, most of them come from a feeling of being excluded. And so that exclusion is happening in pockets of the country, and it's a cause of all this uprising that we see.
Very interesting. Grace,
that's why, interestingly, even the people that were protesting, like I said, there were three groups. One group saying in the middle, not protesting, actually just being there as Nigerians and observers and, like, just showing interest and supporting the fact that their president was in the White House at the time. Interestingly, even amongst the people that were protesting on the side of the Biafrans, there were some of them that, you know, were for dialogue, you know, just putting across. There were some of them that were saying, like, there's a dividing line. Now there's no going back. They are just, this is what they are requesting for, and there's no going back. But there were some of them that were talking about dialogue. How can we come together as a nation?
I see.
You know, and discuss and face a common front and progress as a nation.
Grace, I have been monitoring the Nigerian media, and largely television and, the newspapers and stuff like that. And some of the lawmakers in Abuja were actually saying this was a huge success for President Buhari.
Yeah, as a matter
of fact. Do you agree with them?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you know, like, you know, we did Facebook Live, and you know, it's one of the programs that we covered. This visit had attracted a lot of attention. You know, there were so many people that commented, and even those that were skeptical about him coming, because before he came, we did call-ins to ask listeners, you know, what do you think about him coming? And there were so many people that were saying, no, he shouldn't come, you know, and gave their reasons for not wanting him to come. And like I said, they were very skeptical about him coming. And when he came, from even his arrival, even before the meeting, they saw the benefit of him being here.
He seems to have gotten almost about everything that he really wanted.
And more.
There you are.
And more,
but
yes.
What about the manner in which the American media treated this particular trip, this visit, really?
Yeah, I know there have been comparison with the visit of French president,
yes,
and comparison with the visit of the German chancellor, but this is in a very different light, you know. I mean, people try to say, oh, it wasn't as flamboyant as Emmanuel Macron visit.
But what about the coverage? I mean, the coverage, they did not even ask President Buhari questions.
That's it. Yeah, that surprised me, though, that as we see there, most of the questions were directed
to President Trump
about his take on Nigeria. But the fact of the
matter... What about the fact that even some of the questions which were actually being asked...
were about Nigeria, but they asked it to the president of...
Yes, but some of the first questions were not about Nigeria. They were, in fact, about domestic politics. We're talking about the war. Then we talk about international affairs. We go to Israel, Netanyahu. Prime Minister Netanyahu, about
when his skepticism. When it was a Nigerian president that was visiting, and yeah, we precisely. Have so many...
And what about that?
But then that plays into the general narrative here that the media gives very little attention to African issues, generally. It is.
Are you surprised by that? Because at least as far as I'm concerned, when I was still a student, I used to learn about colonial history.
Mm-hmm.
European history, for example, covering Africa, it was about essentially covering the Europeans in Africa.
Yeah,
and Africans that, were backdrop.
And that has not changed much. You know, that has not changed much. It's until we here have some interest out there that the coverage is skewed in favor of what we need to hear and what we need to talk about. And that has been largely, I mean, you look at whether it be catastrophe happening there, it will come as a footnote. And then something much less will happen in Europe, and then it will get a coverage all day long. But I think, for me, I think it's slighting the significance. For example, Nigeria, a country that we know, you know, stands in terms of its population, in terms of its people, in
the
terms
economy.
Of the economy, and in terms of even Nigerians
its
in this country.
Its contribution even to the United States and globally.
Yeah, in contributions to the world globally. And in this country, for example, you have some of the most technical, the first doctor, a Nigerian doctor, taking out a three-month-old fetus, performing surgery, removing tumor, putting it back, and the mother carrying to term. Nothing had been done like that before. You and know, the list goes on.
I was reading a book about the scramble for Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about the years 1876 to 1912.
12, yes.
But when you look at that book, essentially, you are looking at Dr. David Livingstone in Africa. The man that came with the principle of urging Europeans to go to Africa because of what he called the three C's, commerce, Christianity, and civilization. And then you look at the American British journalist. I'm talking about Henry Morton Stanley, the man, of course, that made it possible for the Congo to end up in the hands of King Leopold II
of
Belgium. Is there anything, frankly, that has changed, especially when you go back to Berlin, the Berlin Conference, in 1884-85,
yes,
where Africa was being divided among the European powers like a piece of cake with not a single African
present
at that table? Are you surprised?
You see, the thing is, the truth of the matter is, you know, truth be said, the Western media is more interested in when there's something negative coming from our countries, that is when it makes news on international scene. But when there's something positive, you hardly see people interested. And I don't want to agree with the saying that only bad things make news. You know, because like we said, if other president can come here and media is interested, there's no reason whatsoever why you'll have a president of when we call a country, a very strong economic, a country with a very strong economy like Nigeria, you know, and with all the issues that are going on in Nigeria, like we said, you know, there are a million and one issues that you can discuss and talk about in, you know, in the media as far as Nigeria is concerned. I was reading a day before he came, a day before he came on the Express, you know, in the paper, there was a column on Nigeria, and even the day after he came, but it's just like brushing over the visit, and that's it.
Well, Grace, unfortunately, time again happens not to be obvious. Alike, you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please, don't go away.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui-Yuwat, and of course, welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. It's time to bring in our social media reporter, Esther Githui-Yuwat. Take it away, Esther.
Thanks, Shaka. As always, we've received great social media feedback this week. As we've mentioned, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari met this week with President Donald Trump at the White House. The two leaders talked about ways to enhance the strategic partnerships between the U.S. and Nigeria. And this leads us to our question of the week, which asked, what issues should top the agenda during the discussions between Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari and U.S. President Donald Trump? And let's start with a tweet from Ahmed Hassan from Somalia, who tweets, I think instabilities in West Africa and the growing Russian and Chinese influence in Africa could be key issues topping the agenda. Now to our social media comment of the week from Facebook fan Mohammed Ahmed Mansour in Monrovia, Liberia, who writes, the issues of security, good governance, peaceful transition of power, fighting corruption and kidnappings, and the fight against terrorism should top the agenda during the discussion between President Muhammadu Buhari and the U.S. President Donald Trump. Specifically, the issue of Boko Haram should grab the attention of the leaders. And let's go to another comment from Facebook fan Diodato Carls in Tanzania, who writes, terrorism should top the agenda because I have a feeling that if Nigeria's issues with terrorism are settled, this will mark the beginning of new Africa without terrorism. And our last Facebook comment comes from Moses Lochang, who writes, Buhari should warn America not to attempt to spread terrorism weapons, regime change, and military bases in and around Africa. A reminder that we appreciate all of our audience feedback. If you are a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. To comment on our Facebook page, just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. To join our YouTube channel, sign up to VOA TV to Africa. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, or simply go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website. To watch us live on your mobile device, download the VOA mobile app. And now let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, a look at the Golden Handshake. On March 9th, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga publicly vowed to work together for all Kenyans, announcing that they had reached a deal to end the ethnic political animosity marking most political affairs in the country. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Now, well, Shaka, that's all for today from the social media comments. You and the guests have quite a number of social media comments to discuss. Back to you.
Thanks indeed, Esther. And of course, today we are talking about Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari's visit to the White House. And our guest, VOA journalist Grace Aliheri Abdu, Reverend Aniyedi Okule, Executive Director, African Faith and Justice Network, and Dr. Baba Adam, Dean of Institutional Effectiveness, Merced College, California, who joins us live via Skype. I hope we are lucky this time, the three of you, of course, ladies and gentlemen. Again, you are most welcome, of course, to Straight Talk Africa, and I'm profoundly honored. Exceedingly humbled, really, to have the three of you on the show.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Let's go to California, the Golden State. Can you hear me Dr. Adam this time.
Yes, I can hear you very clearly. Thank you for the invitation.
You're most welcome. I don't know whether you've been following the discussion here in the studios, but if in fact you were, you probably heard about what a lot of people thought would be the agenda, really, in as far as the meeting between Nigerian President Buhari and President Trump.
Yes, I heard the journalist and I heard the pastor. The meeting basically, on Nigerian point of view, was on security, violence, trade, and the human rights. But I wish they would have expanded it more. So.
But what about the fact that the American media did not actually cover those issues?
Well, again, you know, we set our own agenda, but the idea is that the, as you saw, the hoopla which happened when the French president came to White House with state dinner and everything, and there was a lot of things. Again, the coverage is extremely terrible, and the press conference that President Buhari himself did out at the Rose Garden in White House is not that well covered. So again, the U.S. press and media need to do a better job on Nigeria rather than just when, like the journalist, your host is saying, only when there is poverty, hunger, or problems in that. And again, you mentioned about the partition of Africa and Berlin Conference and so on, which is really a terrible. Only non-Africans are there, and the same thing is happening all over again.
Are you surprised about you know, the fact that this really happened, especially when you know that the sort of colonial history you probably grew up on was in fact the history of Europeans in Africa? The Africans, in fact, were a backdrop on their own territory where they are supposed to be giants.
Well, again, the Africans need to, you know, we, again, need to get our acts together, and that will, you know, I don't want to say false, but the American media or American business or whatever to take notice of the Africa. But so far as we are playing second fiddle or third fiddle or fourth or whatever, they will just take us for granted, and again, they will perform things without our interest, just like in the 1880s when they, you know, sat down in Berlin and partitioned Africa.
You know. So
what about the Reverend?
Yeah, there is a, just to buttress that, there is a saying that until the lion tells its own story, story of the hunt will always glorify the hunter.
Exactly.
You know, so, you know, actually, you know, that he's touching on that, both of them.
It is probably beyond simply a story.
Yeah.
It probably also involves behavior, really.
Behavior, and how
you are perceived.
So actually, let me make a little background for a graviar indulgence. You know, I work for an organization, the African Faith and Justice Network, which was started by American missionaries who had lived in Africa for years. When they came back here, they noticed that the media was always portraying Africa in the negative light. So they set up this organization 35 years ago to try to combat this negative media presence and to try to do education to tell the story of Africa from an African perspective so that people understand. Having said that,
let me take advantage of you being a man, of course, of the white collar.
Okay.
What about Dr. Livingstone's three C's?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about commerce.
Yes.
That is trade.
Yeah.
That is okay, because yes, that's a sort of universal language.
Yes.
But even in that particular context, there is someone who gains more than the other. Then Christianity.
Uh-huh.
Then civilization.
Yes.
What do those three things, what do those things mean, really?
Well, you know, again,
What does it mean when you say you're going to civilize somebody?
Well, you say you put it well when you mention neighbor, in the sense that you are trying to impose on another your own agenda.
Your cultural values.
Your cultural values, your worldview, and you've already come in with an air of superiority. Mm-hmm. So that you are doing violence to the culture and way of life of the people you think you are going to civilize, you know? So the three C's, let me pick it up a little, you know. Commerce, we ended up losing our raw material values.
We still lose.
We're still losing till today. Africa is now a continent of raw material extraction. We take something for $10, we process it for $2,000.
Why doesn't Africa add value? And I have been hearing this business of saying from the time I was a kid that Africa consumes what it does not produce.
Absolutely.
And produces what it does not consume. When is this thing going to change?
Yeah, so the problem, the problem is we appreciate, you know, something that comes from outside more than what we have ourselves. Like if you go to African countries, a lot of African countries, Nigeria inclusive, now, like right now, you have a lot of Chinese taking over our businesses. The same thing like traditional clothes that we make, now they will go and make it in China and come and bring it to Nigerian market, and Nigerians will prefer going to buy made in China when you wash it, it's gone, than to buy what is our own. So we don't even appreciate what we have in the first place.
Let me go to Dr. Adamu again, because obviously he didn't get the chance to be part of the discussion. Dr. Adamu, I gather that you had actually been invited to come to Washington to meet with President Buhari. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Why didn't you come?
In the past, we have gone to Washington, D.C. In his last visit, too, and we played some key role in helping in that.
I cannot hear you. What happened?
Okay. The reason is that we honestly think President Buhari was given a golden opportunity to strengthen some of the perceived or perception or some of the things which the U.S. President Trump said about not only Nigeria but Africa. And we are not coming to Washington to support or play like what you say in that. President Trump have said the S word not only on Nigeria, but whole of Africa. Again, President Buhari claimed that it was maybe made up by media or so. In addition to that, President Trump have said that Nigerians, when they come and see Manhattan skyline, they will not go back to their huts. And again, there are other things like Charlottesville and other things. So we don't feel comfortable coming to Washington and playing unless President Trump respects Africa and black people worldwide. We don't have anything against him or against that, but we're not coming to Washington or anywhere unless he acknowledges and respects, you know, us.
But President Trump, I gather that he actually wrote a letter. It may not necessarily have been included adjective of apology, but it was a sort of an apology that he sent it, in fact, to the chairperson of the African Union Commission, and that it was, in fact, accepted, or at least the language that was used was accepted by the entire leaders of the African Union.
Well, again, he needs to come out. Again, I'm not telling him what to do, but in our own opinion, he needs to come out to the television and discuss that. Rather, you saw it on the Rose Garden when he's cutting off President Buhari, but he was saying that President Buhari knows me, I'm a good man, and so on. Again, this issue is beyond Nigeria. It covers the whole of Africa. Again, what we expect is President Trump and the United States to respect Africa.
What about the African leaders themselves?
If you,
in fact, were to look in the camera direct, just in case some African leaders were watching this Straight Talk Africa program, what would you say to them that they can do so that people do not really have the excuse of looking down upon Africa or using language that is not environmentally and culturally friendly to Africa?
Again, thank you. I sent in, I don't want to say private communication, but I sent an email to President Buhari before he came to United States for this visit, that he need to show dignity and respect for himself. If not, U.S. President Trump will not respect him. The same for whole African 54 or 52 or whatever countries we have, unless we respect human rights, democracy, and denounce sectarianism, the world will not respect us. Honestly, Africa have the best human resources and natural resources, and we can be country or continent second to none. And again, majority of African continent probably are under 30. When compared to Japan or Europe, the average or median age is around 60 years old. So if I'm looking to African leaders, please respect yourself, just impose yourself a term limit. Again, I'm not saying practice American democracy, but practice some form of democracy so that you are not running a country like the Cameroonian dictator for 28, 30 years, or like the former president of Zimbabwe, Mugabe, who was forced to, after he had a heroes for many years, have to be forced out. So to answer your question in short, in Africa, we need to get our acts together for President Trump or anybody to respect us.
Well, first of all, let's face it, Africa is made up of at least 54 nations, which are members of the African Union, plus, of course, Western Sahara.
Yes.
It becomes 55 in a way.
Yes.
He talks about how Africa has immense, natural resources and what have you. But who actually benefits out of these resources?
The West.
Not only the West,
but
with
the
some elements.
That's what I said.
In Africa.
It's a function of governance. It's a function of leadership who mortgage the resources for short-term gains. And you look at, the gentleman there mentioned the enormous wealth in Africa is there, and many resources still prevalent throughout the continent.
Do you know how many Nigerians, for example, have property in Potomac?
Absolutely. Not just Potomac.
And most of these used to be governors of states.
That's the point.
Military officers and what have you.
That's why I was bringing...
No factories, no nothing.
That's why I was bringing up the issue of corruption, that this is something that we celebrated this current president, and people voted en masse that, the incumbent government was voted out because Nigerians understand how corruption has stood in the way of development. In fact, African bishops, entire African bishops, issued a joint statement in February 2013, and they said, corruption is like a cancer that stands in the way of Africa's development. And so, yes, from that perspective, any government, any African government fighting corruption is celebrated by the people. Nigeria's elite, in particular, have siphoned the resources of the country. They are buying, for instance, in the French Riviera, here in Malibu, California, in Potomac, go anywhere, in Dubai. They have properties that you wonder how they could possibly get those kinds of money. And
in Hempstead, London, and you name it.
Name it.
But let's face it, when you talk about corruption, when it comes to Nigeria, really, let's face it, you
it's
have
acute.
To accept that type of corruption is malignant.
It's
because,
evil.
Let's face it, when I was a kid, one of the first books I read about, really, which were written by the African intellectual literary icon, Chinua Achebe, from your region.
Yeah.
You know, things fall apart, but no longer it is, actually.
No
you
longer
begin to
is.
See it in longer
yes.
it is. And when it comes to Man of the People, 1966, what has changed?
Yeah, you see, that's why I keep saying that, you know, that somebody called Nigerians in diaspora economic refugees.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, like the saying, people that are sleeping with hunger in the midst of plenty. Nigerians, for instance,
and we are the most, as a community, exactly, you are the most highly educated.
Nigerians,
absolutely,
for instance, absolutely, have no business going to foreign countries to as looking for means of livelihood in the midst of plenty with the resources that we have in our country. So a lot of people are being forced to go outside of Nigeria looking for. Look at the number of people that are dying, trying to cross to Europe.
Look at the number of doctors in Nigeria and actually have here.
2,500
in South Africa. Yeah. And yet when you go back to Nigeria,
have that problem. Yeah. And even
it is the elite who have to go on some sort of medical tourism. And when they reach in those places, guess who actually is
Nigerians.
Their doctor?
Nigerians.
Research has proved that even in the U.S., you have more Nigerians that are more educated than other immigrants that are in the United States. You have more educated people, you know, coming from Nigeria in the United States alone. So, I mean, Nigerians are educated, Nigerians are hardworking, Nigerians are willing, you know, and able. So, but our leaders have not created the enabling environment for them to strive,
very
for them to prove themselves.
But in fairness, I think to President Buhari, honestly, I think, let's face it, I think he has tried so far. He's only been in power for 3 years. I mean, a little bit of, he has sent a message in terms of people who are corrupt, except that his critics say that type of fighting against corruption seems to be, quote unquote, in their words, not mine, selective.
Yeah. Well, let me start, I will come to that. Let me start to talk about the Nigerian elite. You know, we have a government in terms of the Senate, the National Assembly, that is more expensive than maintaining the U.S. Congress. You know, the average senator, lawmaker, they earns more money than the lawmaker in England, in France, in Russia, around the world. Okay, and you see that a state like Benue State, where there is this issue, they receive from the federal government about 105 billion naira.
Benue State?
Benue State.
Isn't that the state of Dr. Adam?
No, I'm from
Borno. Borno.
You are Borno, yeah. Okay.
100, you know, this, and it's a population of about 4.3 million. And the National Assembly gets 120 billion, and there are only about 2,000 of them. So you see, the cost of government, I know the president, this current president, when he came in, raised an issue about that. But the forces are so great that they don't seem to go beyond themselves. So the cost of government on top of the acute corruption that, you know, is mind-boggling. It hampers the growth of the country. Mm-hmm. And I think that, let me sound a note of caution here. You know, when you look at history, when you look at processes, you look at the Bolshevik Revolution. You
1917,
look at Russia. You look at the French Revolution, okay?
Mm-hmm.
These are the kinds of things that the elite keep living as if there is no tomorrow, and if the population don't matter. And you have, in Nigeria, an educated young population, disenfranchised. And this government the National Assembly. I'm not talking about the presidency now. I'm talking about the National Assembly, the senators, the lawmakers are living as if everything is okay. Someday, if they don't take care, someday they will pay in a very hard way.
So you remind me of the Carnation Revolution, or the Captain's Coup in Portugal in 1974. Let me come to you again, because time happens not to be our best ally, really, Adama. What about the fact that President Buhari really has done at least something about Boko Haram? Boko Haram used to occupy, for example, 3 states, the size, in fact, of Belgium. But right now, they don't actually occupy any particular territory. Isn't that some kind of progress?
Well, Well, yes, a lot of progress. First of all, I'm from Borno State. Actually, I'm born in Maiduguri, which is the epicenter of the Boko Haram establishment. A lot of progress have been made in terms of security. Right now, there is not a single local government area that is controlled by Boko Haram. Before, they were spread to the neighboring state of Yobe and to Adamawa. But there are still remnants of Boko Haram up in the Lake Chad area and in the surrounding area, say Cameroon and Niger Republic, and even up to Central Africa Republic. Definitely a progress has been made, but the Boko Haram is not totally eliminated. One of the things, if we will communicate or advise the government, is the Nigerian government need to address the root cause of the Boko Haram insurgency. The people who created Boko Haram, like Senator Ali Modi Sharif and others, are free and becoming even a chairman of a national party in Nigeria, while, you have thousands and thousands, of people, made homeless or refuge.
Do you have incontrovertible evidence on that? Because those are very, very serious charges.
Well, if you transfer money... well, first of all, Borno have a Ministry of Religious Affairs. They, Ali Modi Sharif created that. And again, you can just Google in that. So again, the people who created this mess are let free, and the Nigerian government is looking the other way.
Unfortunately, my brother, really, time is not our best ally. I have to go because we have to do something else, if you don't mind.
Definitely.
Thank you so very much, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Well, before we go, we would be remiss if we did not pay tribute to the late Professor Adebayo Adedeji, who died after a brief illness on April 25th at age 87. The Nigerian economist and academic was a full-fledged professor by age 36. He was responsible for the economic development and reconstruction of post-Civil War Nigeria. He also was appointed Under Secretary General of the United Nations. Adedeji founded the African Center for Development and Strategic Studies, a non-profit think tank dedicated to multidisciplinary and strategic studies on Africa. May his eternal soul rest in peace.
Amen.
On that note, our guests today were Grace Aliheri Abdu, Reverend Anyedi Okule, and Dr. Baba Adam. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, for many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Nigeria. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.